può dire che nel no.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the show tonight. Quite a few of you already in the chat there. All American Prepper, what's going on? Matt's in the chat, Liberated Lady. Kentucky Goat Man, how's it going? That's hilarious. And Denise and everyone else. I'm not going to go through all the names. My wife's in there, Budget Equestrian. Tonight, we've got a really cool guest on. Nikos from Nikos Bushcraft and Survival is his YouTube channel. You got a lot of videos, but it's sort of a smaller channel at this point. But you've from what I've watched from you, you've got some really interesting stuff. So when you asked to be on the show, I was like, absolutely. Plus, on top of that, you are in Ukraine right now, so you've sort of got a neat perspective on what things are like in a crisis situation. So we're going to talk about both of those tonight. Before we get into all of that, though, let everyone know what you're about, where you're from originally, and all anything you feel like you need to let everyone know where they can find you and all that stuff, and then we'll get into the show.
Sounds great, Dale. I'm really stoked to be on this show. I'm a fan of it. I've been listening to it for, must be around 8 months or something like that. I've got 3 podcasts that are survival-based on my phone, and I always like to... I love your intro. It's really good. It's like... I'm listening to a movie every time it starts up, you know.
Nice.
I'm a bit of a mixed bag. I was born in Greece and I grew up in Scotland. That's why people were probably expecting a Greek accent, but it's a Scottish accent. And then I studied biophysics at university and then moved to London and worked for 12 years as a software developer. And now I'm living a lot of the time in Austria and Ukraine because my wife's Ukrainian. And the podcasting side of things, I started podcasting about 6 years ago, YouTubing. And I had 2 podcasts. I had one on programming and then I had one on basically sort of Joe Rogan style of long form ones before I even knew there was a Joe Rogan podcast. And then I basically didn't have time to manage both of them and merge them both together. That's and the Survival channel is sort of an offshoot of my main YouTube channel because I got a recommendation. I was putting all this sort of survival videos on top of my main YouTube channel. And like my friend was like, you shouldn't have this random running around with this knife pretending to be a caveman while you have your normal podcast, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Put it on its separate channel. Yeah. Hey, a Liberated Lady in the chat. She said already a fan of Nico, and I'm sure that's the Scottish part. Because I believe that's her heritage as well. So,
okay. Well, maybe she understands 20% of what I'm saying, at least. So that's always an advantage.
Yeah. But you know what? It's going to be cool, though, because it's really cool to get that different perspective than inside the United States. And you've been just from what you're talking about right there, you've been all over Europe and things like that. So you've got a good idea about what the pulse is around the world, where we here in the United States sort of get what the media gives us, unless we like Liberated Lady. She spent some time out in Europe, so she understands a little bit too, but unless we travel, we sort of have these preconceived notions about things. And, especially with you being in Ukraine and wanted to get your thoughts, because again, that's, you know, you get what you get told, and that's the whole story. So, should be really interesting tonight. Before we get on to all of that, though, because I do want to talk about your channel a little bit, and I do want to talk about some of your bushcraft stuff. You do quite a bit with some gear, different bug out bags and things like that. So I want to get your thoughts on maybe, you know, different types of, you know, wherever we go with this, different types of bags, things like that. Before we get to that, though, I want to play this video. I was just talking about the whole world travels and things like that. And I saw this video. One of the first ones I saw on your channel was a French ration pack. And I thought this was pretty interesting because it seems like it's a ration pack made for me. It's got all sorts of chocolate in there. It's got all sorts of sweets. Yeah. Have you tried, other than the French one, have you tried other ones as well?
Only the UK one and the MREs, the American ones.
Are the UK ones and the American ones similar?
I only had one of the American ones, and that was when I was living in London. But I think the American one seemed more luxurious at the time. But the British Army ones have improved a lot, because I sent that one of the videos of the British rations to my former UK forces friend, and he was like, "We didn't get this good stuff when I was in the British Army."
Yeah, I imagine. Let me go ahead and play. This is only like a 3-minute video, so I'm going to go ahead and just play it. But it's really interesting, because like I said, when you started going through this, I was like, it doesn't seem like an MRE. It just doesn't. Let me play it instead of babbling about it and let everybody know what I'm talking about here.
I was in military. Scotland, by the way.
Oh, wait, what's that?
The reason I did this in the car was when I was in Scotland, and my parents were already getting annoyed with the amount of gear that I'm bringing in, so I just did it secretly in the car.
Like, fine, I'll go record in my car. All right, I'll go ahead and play this then.
I have something from the French military. It's a French ration pack. Ration, the combat, individual, recharge of something. Okay, let's see what's in it. It's a bunch of biscuits. Now, looking at this, it seems like the French have a really, you know, sweet tooth. So it's got it in French, and then it's got it in English there. A nugget bar. Energy banana. Guess it's a banana bar. Butt wipes. So if this is for every single ration pack, I think that the people that like to recycle stuff are going to be quite kind of annoyed. You've got these water purification tablets, and then these solid fuel things, and then, like, what are you going to do with this when you finish it? Are you going to, like, reuse it for something? Because if it comes in every single ration pack, after a week you'll have 7 of these, and you'll basically, they're just useless metal. So I don't really know what's going on there, to be honest. Coffee. Cocoa, daddy sugar, I guess. Tea, coffee, and some other tea, I think. A cereal nutrition bar. Chocolate muesli. This is £20, so I think it's a bit more expensive than the British ones, and less food. A tin of caviar. Maybe just sardines. Isotonic drink? No, that's just soup, actually. More chocolate cake in a tin, which is kind of unusual. Isotonic drink. Chocolate bar. I mean, look at the amount of chocolate they're giving you. Okay, I think we're down to the more interesting stuff now. So this is like your meal, lunch or something. Couscous and vegetables. And salmon and rice. So I'm not sure if this is worth like £20. But some fruit drink. And another fruit bar. So that's it, £20. So I don't know, like, I would probably prefer to spend 16 on this if and not have to pay for this like metal here. I don't really understand that, but this will be the
so that's
only it, one I'll buy.
That's nuts. There's like 14 different drinks, and then 10 different kinds of chocolate. I mean, and a couple things to eat.
I guess it's like you're on a expedition. Like I just got back from an 8-hour mountain hike with a former Soviet Union officer. And I was eating like bread. I bought this sort of sausage and then some cheese, and we're just eating that. But I would have probably preferred to have those cake in that mess tin.
Yeah, like I said, I would. It's almost like, you know, like I think of our MREs, the United States, as sort of a the same type of thing you would get from a 7-Eleven out here, something that same type of food quality. And that one, it just looks, I mean, it's what I think of when I think of, you know, that whole French cuisine a little bit, other than, I mean, you can't put, you know, pastries and stuff like that in MRE, but they got as close as they could. but I just thought that was pretty interesting, that one. With your other stuff, I asked you earlier or a couple of days ago when I posed, gave you a couple questions. This one's kind of a loaded question that I gave you, talking about as far as bushcraft goes, what are three bushcraft skills that preppers or anybody interested in preparedness should know? And I know that's different depending on your situation, your age, your geography, all of those different things. But what do you think? Because I know in preparedness, a lot of people really aren't into the wilderness stuff, the bushcraft stuff and things like that as much as, you know, some people really are. And, it, you know, vice versa. Some people that are into the bushcraft stuff aren't into preparedness the way that we are. So what do you think are a few things that are important as far as in preparedness and doing things like that, not necessarily going out and knowing how to, you know, make a wooden spoon or something like that, whittle a wooden spoon, but things that could be, you know, life-saving and or anything like that. So I don't know if you had any time to think about that, but what are a few things that you think are important to preppers?
I just want to caveat what I see here by the fact that I'm still a beginner, because I only started this last year. So, but I have a sort of scientific and software development background. So I think I have a sort of slanted viewpoint, and maybe not unique, but more kind of, I guess, inventive way of looking at it. So I think for me, it's improvisation. So how can you use what you have around you to process things like wood? And so for me, like building shelters and just processing wood, you'd have to be able to know how to use a tree, two tree limbs to snap wood together, because you might not be carrying a saw or something like that. So that's quite an important skill. I think battening is quite important, because you can, if you need to create kindling, then that's a survival skill to know. If you have a full tying knife, that's probably one of the more common things that I do. Again, improvisation. Like, so I made a video recently about this silky saw. So it's like silky saws, they come with like this handle, but the handle itself is like it's like three or four times heavier than the blade. So I thought, like, I made this video about a sort of inch bag, and I got made fun of quite a lot. And then I thought about it a lot, but yeah, it was like, because I did this 8-mile hike up a mountain yesterday, and the pack was only probably, I don't know, 10 or 15 pounds, and it sucked, man. They're like, I was like just going up this like 1,300 meter hill, and I just thought, man, if I had an inch bag, I'd be like twice as slow. So like this like ideas, like, okay, how can I reduce weight and use what's around me? This saw still kind of sucks, because I tried using it more, but it still moves quite a lot. So I need to think about that. I'm actually going to do a video telling Silky a modification they could do to that saw to make it a lot easier to do what I'm doing there, attaching it. So yeah, just being like improvising, looking around, always thinking of what you can use lying around, how you can make a knife from, say, a tin lid or something like that, having a knife sharpener so you can make something in the field. And like I said, I'm still a lot of things I need to do. Like I'm still like doing full-time software engineering and stuff like that. So like I would love to be able to spend 2 or 3 days learning how to make a bow and from like hazel tree, but just getting around to that stuff, there's so much stuff I want to get around of. And then again, I'm talking about the bog out inch scenarios, that's every situation is completely different. There's no way that you can carry everything you want and need to survive forever out in the field, which is something that nobody has done since probably, I don't know, Elijah in the Bible, where God fed him with food from ravens, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, actually, is that and this goes for all parts of, you know, preparedness and surviving crisis or getting through crisis, is that improvisation, because you really need to, we don't have, we can plan and we can sort of calculate things, but you really don't know until you're in it. And your ability to pivot, your ability to change course and do things and it not depend on, say, you know, you've got your bag and you've got all your supplies in it. Us preppers spend, and I'm sure you're the same way, spend just a bunch of time making sure you've got the exact right parts in your bug out bags and your inch bags and your get home bags, whatever bags that you have. But if you lose that, you don't have that, or something breaks, you've got to be able to adapt and you've got to be able to fix it, because when the cards are on the table, you're stuck with what you have. So it really is an important aspect.
What people don't mention on the inch bag videos is that you're probably going to be with somebody else. So even if it's with a woman, then, you know, you're going to be able to share at least 30% of that weight with her. Anyway, so you could just give her like the axe and the knife and the tools and stuff, and then you carry the food and water and things like that. Because like there's, yeah, it's just, and another thing, I posted like some ideas on Reddit just based on my Ukraine experience, and that post got about 100,000 views on Reddit, and people were really agreeing with one of the points that I made, was that community is the most important thing in survival.
Yeah, and I you know, it's weird because the last, I don't know, 6 or 8 videos, that has come up almost, you know, I'd say 7 out of 8 of the last videos, but I think it really is. I mean, I've got that. We'll pivot to that real quick and we'll talk about bug out bags later, but because that was really interesting to me. See if I can pull this up. Not only what you wrote, but the responses as well were pretty interesting, because you talked about some of your observations while you're there. It's titled here, Real SHTF's Observations from Myself Living in Ukraine for over the last 2 years. And you talked about in here, I got to pull this down, what you were just talking about there. Somewhere in here, you talked about how everyone has to, I think this whole thing was sort of about that, where everyone basically helps each other out, pulls together. And that's, you would talk to me about how other places, you know, other countries that are friendly to the Ukraine, help them out a little bit. And I'm thinking from the United States perspective, we'd probably have Canada doing a little bit of that, probably have Mexico a little bit. But a lot of it is that local stuff, right? Is that what you were getting to, alluding to in this, the I guess the neighborhoods, that sort of community?
Well, Ukraine has been friendly to Poland, Romania, Slovakia. And so when you have this Russian invasion, a lot of those refugees were not prepared. No one expected Russia to invade, hardly anybody here. So like there was a lot of less prepping than what you'd imagine if, say, I don't know, Mexico was amassing next to the border of America. That I guess the people in America would be more like prepared, I guess. Even, but then again, it's a different situation, right? Because Mexico's not like Russia.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, you had millions and millions of refugees, and the roads got clogged up pretty quick. Even within the west side, the border's clogged up within 48 hours, and they're talking 24-hour waits at least. And then those countries are still letting people in en masse. So a lot of people had an exit. So if there was like the sea on the west side of Ukraine, then you would have a different situation. You'd have people fighting over food in a sense. And also, you have a lot of these countries sending in massive amounts of food. So just with the hubs that I'm involved, there's like lots and lots of food that are coming in, tons of food. Every week there's about, I don't know, it must be at least a ton of food come to the community that we support. And we have about 50 to 80 refugees that come, and we just hand out bags to them. So there's a lot of people that dig deep to sort of fund that. So, but then again, speaking in a sort of fractal lower level, then if you have a SH to fan scenario happen to you, then if you're friendly with your neighbors and they have, you know, homesteads, then you could start sharing some food from them. You know, that's pretty much what I mean there.
Yeah. Now, people in Ukraine, as far as like they're farming and being self-sufficient and doing things like that. Is it something that they sort of were accustomed to before? Because there's been stuff going on in Ukraine for decades. A lot of people don't know that even before the whole Russia thing happened, there was the civil war stuff. And I mean, just so much going on there. A lot of people that listen to this channel probably know, but most people don't really know that Ukraine has been not a happy place for most of the time for a while. So as far as the self-sufficiency aspect, the gardening, the growing their own food, the working, you know, the bartering type stuff, is that more of a, is it less of a shock, I suppose, for them because they're used to it? Or is it something that they've had to sort of get accustomed to?
Sorry, I had to switch mics. So sorry about the sound quality.
That's okay.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Well, in general, life in Ukraine is hard because, like, you imagine having a salary that's, say, 7 or 8 times less than what the West is. And then with inflation, you have the food going up like 200 to 300%. So a lot of people are making do of lower life quality right now. So instead of buying like fancy foods and packages, you're basically buying a lot of buckwheat and a lot of just local produce. In a sense, that's a good thing because you're having less plastic and less processed and, you know, a lot of things that you're paying for. All those ingredients, like 20-30 ingredients in the packets, you know, that's where the money's, the expense is going to. So you basically have to cut down a lot. So it is a difficult, more difficult place to sort of grow up and live. But then again, you have this much stronger sense of community. So people are sort of used to sort of bartering a little bit and doing odd jobs here and there and having to make do with more of what they have. So when you do have an SHTF scenario, then there's more sort of backbone, there's more community that you can fall back to.
Yeah.
That's what I've kind of experienced. But Ukrainians sort of develop a really, really good sense of humor. I think they're the funniest people in the world. I was sitting at the church the other day and I'm basically talking to some guys and I'm saying, yeah, Ukrainians will laugh really hard and cry immediately after they laugh, you know.
Yeah, that's crazy. I guess you'd have to. I mean, what do you do, right? I mean, it's horrible what's going on and all that, but I don't know. I think I would probably be the same way. Either that, or you go bonkers and you go out of your mind, right? I mean, you gotta maintain your sanity somehow. I think it's interesting though because. If the United States were in that situation, I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but say Canada, like you're talking about, Canada amasses on our border, or maybe Canada and Mexico form this alliance and they're sick of the United States. And they're, you know, it would be that situation where a lot of people here in the United States are so just used to, I guess it is kind of entitled, kind of spoiled, used to a certain lifestyle. Whereas in Ukraine, it's less of a fall or less of a drop off, I suppose, to in it. And it still is. I'm not saying it's nothing, but it would be harder for people to grasp that in the United States, maybe even in, you know, in the UK, really developed countries that have had it easy, France had it easy for a long time. It'd be really hard for people to grasp a situation like that. But at the same time, I think people are pretty resilient and you'd fall in line. A lot of people would fall in line pretty quick and just understand that, hey, this is the way it is now. Is that kind of your feelings about it too? Or?
Well, the fall from the sort of normal lifestyle when the mass invasion happened, because really the war started in 2014. According to people's perspective here, we'll correct you pretty quickly on that. But you have a lot of people that are Ukrainians abroad, and also those that have went abroad as refugees that found work often in countries that are paying a lot better than they earn here. So they're sending a lot of money and food back. There's lots of Ukrainians that are, say, that are driving back and forth between the border. We've driven probably 50 times across the border since the war started. the mass invasion. So there is a big follow, because like imagine most guys have something hanging over their head that you can be called up to the military to serve. I can't really imagine what that's like, because I'm British citizen, I can come and go. I almost feel bad sometimes when I can just leave across the border and all my friends are here, a lot of guys. But that said, maybe only 5 to 10% of my friends have been called up. So the guys that I know here are putting a pretty brave face, but one of the guys I had on my show, he was called up to the military. He's a pastor, actually. He's been on the front lines for about 16 months now, and it's taxing on him.
I imagine.
He's got a lot of American friends as well, and we're on Facebook together and stuff like that. And you just see how the war affects people. That just, you know, a lot. I heard about this medic that a younger guy, I think or something like that, and he was over on the front lines, and he actually had a heart attack just with the stress of dealing with the casualties. You know, imagine a young guy, the medical traumas that he's seeing there caused him to have a heart attack.
Yeah. How close or I know things are going on all over the place out there. How separated are you from all of that? Is it, you know, you see and hear stories, people coming into you, or?
Well, we have a lot of, most of the soldiers are on the front lines. Sometimes you'll see them back here. I remember one soldier guy who had a Jeep, and his Jeep had some shrapnel. So the windows have like lamination on it. So he had like holes that size with shrapnel on it. And he had like shrapnel in the bumper, and I pulled that out, and it's like this metal stuff. And he was just there getting his car fixed, and his girlfriend was there, and a lot of these soldiers are seen walking around in their uniform. They'll have like a girlfriend or wife with them, because then they'll be going to the front lines a week later, you know. So I actually gave the guy my poncho. I just felt like, and it's a tiny gesture, but I just like, I think he needs this thing more than me, you know, this soldier going off to the front line.
Are there people, I imagine that, like, if you're, that there are some people that just can't move out of the way, right? Like if they are where they are, and if things are happening around them, they'd wait until they absolutely had to. Or have you heard stories about that or seen anything like that, where people are just like, I waited as long as I could and I had to get out, and then maybe wait for things to calm down and then go back home? Or are there people living that close to it that really don't have a choice? I'm sure there are.
Well, the situation is continuing evolving. Like when Russia invaded on the, I think it's 24th of February, there was already people that were moving to the West. I mean, where we lived in the West, a lot of the properties and rentals were full because people were worried, because Russia was amassing the vehicles and the borders. But when Russia took Kostomel Airport and they sent that big column down from Belarus and north of Ukraine, the roads got clogged up really quickly because just people weren't ready for it, and people were like really worried because it's a big unknown situation. Like what would have happened to people in if Russia had taken the whole of Kiev, surrounded it, there's an unknown situation. You might never be able to get out again, like the Soviet Union, you know, like maybe they'll build a wall. And we saw what happened in places like Butcher and stuff like that. There's those massacres that happened. So, I don't think those were really apparent until maybe 2 to 3 days afterwards. When people went back in there, it was the Ukraine army managed to sort of regain some ground. But that was really scary because there was a lot of unknowns and a lot of people that didn't like Zelensky. Like I was talking to quite a influential Ukrainian business guy on the plane flying back from Austria. He had to do some surgery. for whatever reason, he wasn't living in Ukraine, but he didn't like Zelensky. He didn't like, you know, I guess, where money were going or whatever. Like, he had his own reasons. But when Zelensky decided to stay in Ukraine when Russia was everything was unknown, he changed his opinion about Zelensky then.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me, these real life stories. That's why I'm kind of asking this stuff. I had Selko on my podcast a long time ago, and I don't know if you know who Selko is, but he was in the Balkan Wars in the 90s is when that was. And he was talking about how when his city was under siege, the things that they went through. And it's something that we sort of fantasize about as preppers that, you know, all over the world. I mean, preppers are mostly here in America, but I've got some listeners that are in the UK and Australia and things like that. And it's something we try to think about. I don't know necessarily if fantasize about is the right word for it, but it's something we think about all the time, and we think about different situations. But you really don't know until you hear about situations like this and you see what people actually did, what people actually go through. We have this, you know, back to the community thing. We have this idea of I've got all my stuff. I'm just going to hunker down and, you know, just, you know, everything's just going to bypass me or whatever. But it really is that's a great example of the community, the effort it takes from everybody around you to be on the same page, helping each other out, doing things like that, to get the ball back rolling, you know, being on that same team. It's just really interesting to me to get those stories. Have you heard anything about people taking advantage? Because we talk about that all the time in some sort of SHTF situation, disaster scenario. You're going to, and this is something Selko talked about as well. He had the warlord type guys that would basically with the food and things like that, they would grab some of that up and just charge exorbitant prices for it, for the average person that just needed food. Have you heard anything like that, or is that more of a situation like he was in, where it was like a siege and really restricted?
We're so busy with what we're doing that we just have like the food that comes in and we hand it out. We store some, but in the early days we were getting a lot of generators. So these generators were shipped all parts of Ukraine. You know, it's quite, when Kiev was first invaded, there was places without power for like days and days and days. So we had one generator go out there and then it's like, you can imagine these sort of Soviet Union flats, and then it's like no power and you have one generator and you have people all gathering around doing stuff, charging their phones and stuff like that. But yeah, we haven't had anything in our, I'm sure it goes on. I mean, it's always bad actors. It's always, you know, the small, very tiny percentage of Nazis in Ukraine that people would play to, you know, beat that. I haven't personally met any Nazis here. And, you know, if there were so many Nazis in Ukraine, why are there people from the West coming to ours? As most of our refugees are ethnic Russian speaking, so obviously to me if there was such a bad Nazi problem, they would be coming to our part of Ukraine, where there's, you know, they speak Russian here, no problem. We don't care what they speak, we just feed them, you know. And most of them are young women and young children, maybe some older ones. Sometimes you get some guys coming along as well, older guys.
Yeah, it's a complicated situation out there. I mean, it's real easy to take one side or the other, but it's a whole lot more complicated than that. The whole Nazi thing, you would think with the media that the United States is 80% Nazis, Ukraine is 80% Nazis, and you know, I mean, it's ridiculous how they hype all that crap up. But it's a very difficult situation. That's why I didn't necessarily want to talk about the politics side of this whole thing, because there's just so much to it. It's horrible. I think it all boils down to, it's horrible for the people that have to deal with this stuff. You've got these big wigs, these power brokers that basically, and this is not just Ukraine, not the United, this is all of the countries. You've got these big wigs that just use people as pawns throughout history. It's been the same way. People are irrelevant on their little chessboard. We need to be swept off until we matter again. And that's a, you know, the same situation that's going on out there, and the same situation that, you know, if something like that happened here or anywhere you live, it would be the same type of thing.
I've got good friends in America that are on both sides of the thought process. Some absolutely hate Zelensky. They think Ukraine's completely corrupt. There's child trafficking going on. This month, all the money's been siphoned off, stuff like that. I'm sure there's parts of that are true. But so many people, I think there was somebody on Candace Owens or something like that, just saying F Ukraine, you know, like, or people just, they'll have this sort of really emotional reaction to Ukraine. And I'll say to them, well, the best way to find out is to actually come to Ukraine, spend some money. No, I'll just sit here and on my keyboard and you know, having a strong opinion. That's all you will have unless you come here and spend time with the people, you know. And for me, Ukraine is quite a conservative country. There's quite a lot of family values here, so I don't understand why a lot of this. It seems like some of the more conservative right wing are against Ukraine, but Ukraine is a more conservative country than America. You know?
Yeah, yeah. See, I'm kind of like, I have a major mistrust in the powers that be and the media. So that's my, and I've got absolutely nothing about the people against the people of Ukraine, and I cannot stand Putin, but it seems like here, anytime you say anything that goes against the, you know, anytime you question something that's going on in Ukraine, all of a sudden you're some sort of Putin apologist and all that. And notwithstanding the people that just go out and say, screw Ukraine, because that's in my opinion, a moron doing that, because it's there's bigger issues. There's bigger reasons why all this stuff is happening. And it's really got nothing to do with the people there. It's the people pulling the strings that are causing all this crap. And this is everywhere in the world.
I hear you. Yeah. What's strange to me is that a lot of the people that are saying F Ukraine, before the mass invasion started, I'm a huge fan of it. I'm still really scarred from the whole COVID thing. I got really depressed and angry about that whole dystopian nightmare. But what's kind of strange to me is a lot of these people that implemented those policies are pro-Ukraine, but the ones that were like anti-human experimentation are sort of like fall into the whole Putin's savior kind of stuff. So that's, for me, it's a bit of a weird place to be when you have people to switch sides. Like, so I'm just like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. A lot of it is getting attention too. I think you get these media personalities and they know they're going to kind of shock people into paying attention to them. And they do that as well. So you never know. And that goes to something you said too the other day about a certain prepper YouTube channel where it's World War III for the 342nd time or something like that. Yeah. It's the same type of mentality. If you say things that cause a reaction, you're going to get on the radar. You're going to be on the radar more. So it's sad that's where we are these days. And I guess we've always been there. It's just more amplified now that you've got social media and all that. But I think we start paying attention to all that stuff and then we lose sight of the issues that really matter. The things that are going on that, you know, we start taking sides with, whether it's, you know, I don't trust the United States and what they're doing in Ukraine. And that's the whole problem. I talk about that all the time. We've meddled over there so much that's probably a big part of it. You've got, you know, the whole Putin thing and all that stuff. But what really matters as far as from a preparedness perspective is, I think what we're sort of talking about today is how the people are handling this situation, what they are going through, because that's what we're going to have to deal with. If something like that does come to the United States or if, you know, I don't want to say his name, if he's right, and we do get to that point of World War III, and it is, you know, all over the place, we're going to have to, it's not going to matter what Putin did, what Biden did, what, you know, anybody did. It's going to matter what we're going through that day and how we're going to handle the situation that day.
Yeah, I lost about 10 seconds of what you're saying there, but,
Oh,
I think obviously So a lot of the scars here, obviously, are, I mean, people that are dead, there's nothing for dead, right? There's nothing more I can say about that. But the mental scars are from this war, especially the soldiers, when a stuff map, like post-traumatic stress disorder situations, is going to impact this country. And is impacting this country. Like, I think there was only one time I ever had a bomb, and that was in Athens. And it was about a mile away. And it kind of affected me for like 2 or 3 days, you know, like many panic attacks. But these guys are on the front line dealing with like Russian roulette where the mortars are going to land, and they're dealing with day after day. I mean, you just see soldiers, people on front line, they change mentally pretty quickly after being there a few months.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess every country has a conflict. So.
Yeah. I caught about half of what you were saying there too. I think your internet's a little bit weird, but yeah, how you brought up something really, really important, I think, that a lot of people don't think about too. And that's the mental fatigue that you would go through in any sort of crisis situation where you are going through things where you do have loss of life. You do have, your lifestyle is completely changed. You do have those things that you need to think about, not only yourself, but the people around you too, how you handle those people and how you handle all of that. It is, you can either make a situation better or make a situation worse, depending on what it is. And sometimes you just won't have a choice. I mean, it's something that, you know, we think about the gear, we think about the supplies, we think about what we're going to do, you know, what we're going to eat, what we're going to drink and things like that. But we don't think about that mental toll quite a bit that, could play a huge factor in, depending on what the situation is, that the PTSD, the trauma, all of those things.
I think sometimes the medical problems are worse than physical problems. I mean, I don't know of any physical problems that affect me, you know, majorly, but I'm still mentally messed up from the whole lockdown scenario. So I'm really angry and bitter about what the government did to us. You know, it was horrible in Austria. At some point, they were threatening to fine people who weren't vaccinated. You know, I'm so, I got kicked off my main LinkedIn account just the post that I was posting back in the day. You know, angry with the people behind all that stuff. You know,
there were a lot of us out there, and thank God, because they. Yeah, that whole situation, I know this kind of gets off topic, but that's, again, you're talking about SHTF scenarios, that could be something that they try to pull again. But that was like a concerted effort globally to just, just completely lock people up, shut everything down. And it really did no good. Absolutely no good at all. I mean, I'm sure there's little things that it, you know, it helped solve. But it was frustrating, but it was also watching them just so brazenly just do what they did and with just contempt. It was very frustrating.
I guess I can understand a lot of the people why they don't trust what's going on with like the aid to Ukraine. They see this government that locked them up and tried to force them with some, inject some, I have to be careful what I say because I got my first YouTube strike. One of my videos. and then WHO information posted underneath that video for a while. I can understand people won't trust anything that comes out of the government's mouth, but in a sense, at the moment, we have, it's like having a chronic, you know, flu versus having a cancer. You can imagine the cancer being this Russian invasion. So at the moment, I can focus on the cancer versus this virus that's been annoying me. And that's what I can see. And then I'll go back to like mistrusting the government.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, it's pretty hard because there's so many, and it seems like it's more and more so recently. It's at least here in the United States. I know, and I've paid a little bit of attention to some of the global stuff, more so like the UK, Australia, you know, places that speak the same language as me, because I can, understand what they're talking about and all that. But I've seen in Paris, in Australia, they've had protests and things like that. So it's good to see people standing up and saying enough of this crap, but it's really hard to trust anything any of these yahoos say anymore, because they're sort of doing their own thing, and they're playing by their own rules, and they could really care less. It's not about us thriving anymore. It's about us being a piece of their puzzle, right? We're part of their machine. We're the oil in their machine. We're necessary for their machine to run, but it's something they just want under the hood. They don't want to see it. They don't want to hear about it. And you know, just be quiet, get your shot. And more and more so these days, it seems like it's just picking up in history, when you're thinking about France and Marie Antoinette, let them eat cake, and where the kings and queens would basically just treat everyone like dirt. And we sort of got away from that. And now it seems like we're moving back to that sort of system again, where it's just like, we're better than you. We're going to tell you what to do, and you're going to do it. Otherwise, we're going to lock you in your house. We're going to arrest you. We're going to fine you. We're going to make your life unbearable.
Yeah, interesting comment from Brandon. What I learned during lockdowns is that people and citizens are just as unreliable as the government. No one coming, save yourself. And I found that too in Austria. Like, I used to go, I worked remotely, so I go to the local McDonald's quite a lot. And as soon as like the lockdowns came in, because I was unvaccinated, people, the staff there, just like, you can't come here, and you get to go and all this stuff. And I was saying, like, well, you know me, I come here. And then as soon as like this whole lockdown was lifted, like, I can just go there and just drink like normal. Like, this person was basically like a Nazi to me. And then as soon as the lockdown's left, she's told, oh yeah, he's unvaccinated, can come drink here. And we just go on as normal. Hey, how's it going? Yeah. How you doing?
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy to see how people reacted to some of that stuff. They got pushed into it by the government, by the media, that the whole panic, the whole, you know, you got to freak out about all this stuff. And the guy next to you, if he breathes on you, you're probably going to die. So, you know, things like that.
If they lock down again, it's action time. I'm not going through that again.
I think a lot of people.
It's a game on. I'm not going through that again. I'm still mentally scarred from it all, really. No one's going to lock me down again.
Yeah, I think there are quite a few people that are like that. I'm kind of curious if they'll actually, you hear rumblings about it, about different things like this could happen or that could happen. A scenario coming out where they're planning for the next one, the next pandemic. Basically war gaming it. So when you see them doing things like that, it just really makes you wonder if they'll actually try it again. But I think there's going to be a whole lot of resistance if they do.
Yeah, they're not admitting to their mistakes. So they basically cried wolf from a nasty flu. It wasn't nasty to me, but I know people like myself that have had, my granddad died from COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, crying wolf. So there's no one's admitting the mistakes. There's no, you know, not much. We still have to pay our taxes. Even if your business got wrecked, there's no like, oh, we'll forgive you from this. You just have to work it off, you know. And I agree with a lot of Elon Musk statements that the government's basically have a monopoly on violence and they're inefficient with the tax usage. So, like, what we see here in Ukraine is people that need the aid the most. We can get the food to them. We have large kitchens so we can cook for them in bulk. And so, like, if they don't have time to cook or they're old and lonely, then we can allocate this food that is a resource or money, you can think of it that way, very efficiently. And a lot of people, they have problems with their plumbing or like something's broken in their car, we can sort of pull the resources together instead of them paying thousands of euros like they do in Austria to have them some car fixed or something like that. The sort of efficiency of scales when the people can run their own resources, you know. And I believe by government and how you support the government for your taxes. But big government is like, you know, our big government shut down the churches. So like at some point you have to say what does your worldview dictate, you know, what's right and what's wrong, and the government can't shut your churches down.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like to me, and you're out in, you've got more experience out there in the whole European thing, but so I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. But it seems to me like, I don't know if the World Economic Forum is a big deal out there like it is to me, but or their sway out there. It seems like Europe is sort of almost a proving ground for some of these new ideas, the new governments, the new policies. Whereas in America, it's a little tougher to get those things through because of our constitution and things like that. But it's, does it seem that way to you, or am I just, do I have this American idea, as I'm looking out through that stuff? Have you seen stuff going that way where it's that totalitarianism type thing where governments, the UN's getting stronger and the world government, things like that? I know I'm getting a little bit conspiratorial here, but.
Yeah, well, the whether it's the dodgy people will find a way to be dodgy, whether it's through the WF or whatever. The WF is like an oil system that allows lots of rich people to get together and decide our futures. But WF doesn't seem so controlling as you might think. I don't see like their policies. They're more like a think tank. They don't have actually real power. There wasn't WF, to be something else, Bilderbergs or whatever. WF is just a lot more polished, and if you have 50,000 euros exposure.
My thing with them is the way they infect governments. It's not necessarily them. Like, I don't think that the World Economic Forum is going to take over the world, but I think the way that they sort of get their tentacles and put their ideas through and get things done or interject themselves in some of these things, that's what sort of concerns me about them. But governments are never going to give up their power to the World Economic Forum. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think like China gives lip service to the WF, but I don't think they have much sway on what China does. A lot of other big countries.
Yeah, yeah. I had one more question for you, and I cannot remember what the heck it was. If anybody in the chat has got any comments or anything for Nikos, let me know before we get out of here. I did forget to mention in the beginning, make sure I've got the link to his channel in below this video. Make sure and go subscribe over to his channel, especially if you're into the bushcraft and the gear. I know a lot of us, we didn't get a lot into the gear tonight, but a lot of us preppers just geek out on all the gear stuff. Just looking at different ideas and different bags.
I see my All American Prepper in there. I loved your show last week. I'm a big fan of yours. So thanks for joining the podcast. And I agree with what you're saying. The Canadian Preppers videos on you are absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. All American Prepper. He's a character, man. I forgot to tell him last week that you had mentioned that you enjoy his shows. Lisa loves him too. My wife. I'll get on, and he's just that's what it's kind of about. I mean, life is, you got to be ready for some of this stuff, and you've got to deal with a lot of these disasters and everything, but you got to live too. And you got to have fun with it. And you got to do what you can. And if you can help other people out, I think that makes you feel a little bit better. If you can laugh and joke about things, it makes you feel better, a little less stressed. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it's all about. So Brandon said, no questions. This is a great episode, a meeting of the minds. Thanks. All American Prepper said, thanks, buddy. Yada. You want to shock your audience. I don't know what sort of audience you have, but you get all American Prepper on your show. Accent. That'd be fantastic.
You'd get on like a house on fire, man, really.
Yeah. That'd be great. At any rate, yeah, make sure go over and subscribe to Nico's channel. I'd love to have you back on in the future. Or if you're doing a podcast episode and want me to jump on with you, we could do that. I don't know I've got some internet experience and stuff. I don't know that I would be, as far as programming and all that. I don't know, but if you're ever looking for a guest, let me know.
That's why I reached out to you. I invited on you on my show, but you invited me on your show.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I need to read my emails then, huh? Yeah. Well, that's hilarious. but yes, at any rate, I'd love to be on your show. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't even. I'm going to have to go back and read those emails now, and then I'm going to feel like a fool.
I just want to mention one piece of advice. Like, if no matter where you're at, I recommend you get in a community hub where you can pull resources, meet together often, if not daily. I mean, I meet my friends at this church here daily. You know, I play in the worship, I play the band every day. Because it's a small town, I can do those things, but it's important to have a hub where you can pull resources, barter, or even just share skills. I really encourage you to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the community. Like I said, I've talked about this in probably 8 of my last 10 shows, but it really is one of those things that is important. Something that, regardless, like it or not, when the chips are on the table, that's going to be what you're going to have to go to. And if you're going to try to, if you're going to be that guy being the lone wolf, you may get by for a little bit, but it's not going to be the best existence. And it's not going to be the most, you're not going to have much longevity, I don't think.
Yeah.
So
it's been a fantastic time, Dale. I really appreciate you and giving me the trust to expose your audience to my viewpoints here.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely, send me an email whenever you're ready, and I'll definitely be on your show, and we'll get back together and do this thing that you thought we were going to do in the first place.
Yes.
Everyone in the chat, appreciate y'all joining in tonight. Next week, I will be back. I've got Tag on. Me and Tag are going to be doing a show. I'm not sure if it's going to be my channel or his channel, but it's going to be on both channels. But from Life Done Free, we're going to talk about probably a little bit of the same thing, community, homesteading, things like that. So make sure and join that show next week. Again, go over and subscribe to Nikos' channel, his Nikos Bushcraft and Survival. Links below in the channel description. Or if you're interested in his other channel as well, you can check that out if you're interested. Kevin may be interested in the programming thing and all that stuff. So, Nikos, again, appreciate it. Everyone else, stick around for a little bit. We'll talk. And then everyone else, take care and prepare. We'll talk to you all later.
It was an honor, so thanks.